I think I'm going to just leave it fairly brief at that. There's a great deal more that could be said. But that's what this verse is talking about. It's talking about, well, taking that on. It says secretly, presumably so that you don't make a big sort of egoistic show of it. You don't, kind of go around with a badge, I'm taking on the sins of the world, or hanging yourself on crosses and things like that. You just do it. You just take it on as an attitude. It's interesting. I mean, presumably, if you wanted to and didn't have the wrong sort of conditioning, it's presumably, in a way, part of what the Christian myth is getting at. Unfortunately, it's wrapped up in so much else that it makes it problematic. But it's not intended as a self-martyrdom. It's intended as a self-transcendence. And so you resolve directly or indirectly to give all help and joy to your mothers. We'll look at the mothers in a minute. But directly or indirectly. The directly means that you help those that come before you. As far as possible, as a natural and spontaneous action. And indirectly means that you sense yourself to be part of something that's more than yourself. So that, well, if you help somebody, I'm helping somebody. You're aligning yourself with the forces that are endeavouring to resolve the world's crisis, if you like, so that you feel you're part of a general movement. I felt this more and more important. We do belong to a movement. Some of us belong to an order, and I value that very, very highly. But I'm also part of a general Buddhist world. And I'm part of a world in which there are many people who try to contribute. I try to help. And I consider all those people. I try to consider all those people my brothers and sisters. And that I'm part of the forces that are trying to alleviate the world's suffering. I'm also, unfortunately, part of the problem too. And I'm trying to deal with that, I assure you. But this is what the indirectly means, I think, that you know you can't do it yourself, so you sense yourself to be part of something greater, both in the practical, mundane sense that there are many people who do try to make a contribution, and in the transcendental sense that there is, as it were, a force inherent in reality, which is a force for, well, the ultimate benefit of all. And you're aligning yourself with that. And in fact, in a way, in the end, you're giving yourself up to that. Because you, as an ordinary egoistic individual, can't do anything. Or only can do a very limited amount. And almost everything that you do, you're undoing by virtue of your ego clinging. So you give all help and joy to your mothers. Well, this is, of course, that aspect of the practice that consists in reflecting that all beings have in limitless time being your mother or father many, many times. And assuming you've got a positive feeling about your mother and father, which some of us don't have, coming from this blighted culture, well, if you have that positive relationship, it immediately means something to you. It's quite interesting in India. People don't have the sort of problems with their parents that we tend to have here. They have other problems, but that's another matter. For most people, the idea of mother and father is something very, very positive. Whereas for many people, certainly in my experience in the West, have quite mixed feelings about their parents. But yes, what's being appealed to here is a more, as it were, natural state of things, a more traditional state of things. Of course, even in those traditional circumstances, it's not that straightforward, and feelings are more ambiguous than perhaps people often realise. But nonetheless, what's being got at is the fact that you have a very special feeling for your parents, and especially for your mother. And that's significant that mother is picked out here. Because your mother nurtured you well, probably did, not everybody, but mostly, most people are nurtured by their mothers from a very early age, even if in other ways their mothers were less than adequate. They were nurtured by them. When I was dealing with this in India on retreat, and the morning that I came to give a talk on this particular verse, some monkeys invaded Vordharan Retreat Centre. They were there actually most of the retreat, and I found studying them fascinating because they revealed so much about us, but that's another story. But one of the things that really fascinated me was there was a mother monkey, and she'd obviously got a newborn baby, which was completely hairless. All it could do was just cling on. Apparently they can cling on at the moment they crawl from the womb. And so it was just clinging on underneath her. And what I was really, really impressed by, very, very moved by, the extraordinary care she gave that baby. You know, she was all the time protecting it, you know, constantly looking around her for danger, and very, very sensitive you know, looking for food to sustain it, well, indirectly, so to speak. But it was a sort of encapsulated motherhood, that intense care and giving of self, you know, in a natural way to mother, to baby. Mothers are an underestimated, underrated feature of life. But yes, the mother gives you that sort of care. And well, the baby is completely dependent on it, on its mother, for that period. So, you know, what you do in the practice is you contact your gratitude and respect and love for those who cared for you in that way, especially, usually your mother and father or mother and father substitutes, in their different ways. But those, that absolutely basic primal relationship that goes so far back in your life. You know, if you don't have a reasonable degree of mothering, you'll die. You know, there are plenty of studies which show that babies that are not properly nurtured just die. Not even they can be fed, but if they're not given some degree of love and affection, they just die. They don't thrive, as they say. So we've had that, even though it may be for some of us ambiguous or problematic or whatever. We've had that. And so we try to contact our feeling of love and gratitude and awe almost at the what our mothers especially did for us in that way that enabled us to thrive and live. And then we reflect, according to the traditional practice, that everybody has at one time or another, in beginning in this time, done that for us. They've played that part for us. If you can get into that, it obviously is extremely powerful and effective. If you can look around and think, Abhaya was my mother once. He made a very good one too. I'm very grateful to him. But joking apart, you know, if you can contact that, if you can sort of sense that everybody has at one time or other done that for you, well, obviously you're going to have a quite different attitude to them and to feel a great sense of obligation to them in a positive sense, a desire to help them and to give them joy. You know, having been involved with looking after my own mother for the last period and, you know, just sort of knowing very natural feelings of wanting to make her happy and to make her comfortable and so forth emerged. Which in a way took me a bit by surprise. So I'd taken quite a long time trying to get away from my mother. So you try to contact that sense and use it as a spur to your feelings of empathy and desire to help and to contribute, to take on their sufferings and to give them whatever you can of joy. Of course, that also is interesting, isn't it? Because what is joy? Joy in Sanskrit is pramodya. What does joy arise from? It arises from Shraddha, yeah. Or in some versions of the spiral, from Sila. So it arises from your faith and your spiritual practice. That's the genuine source of joy. It's not just talking about, you know, pleasure in the ordinary sensuous way, but a sense of inner joy arises from your spiritual practice. So, well, that means if you want to give joy to others, if you want to give help to others, you need the inner resources to do so. So again, there's a spur to a commitment to your own spiritual practice and to giving to others in that way. So you allow yourself to experience the fact that you're surrounded by beings with whom you have an intimate connection, in if you can rise to it, who you can feel even as if they were your mothers or had been your mothers. And you try to sort of have that sense of gratitude and respect and even spontaneous and natural desire to help and to please. And you allow then yourself to recognize that the deep suffering that is inherent in human existence, or in all existence, more in other kinds of existence. Again, watching those monkeys was really, really instructive. It is not an easy life. It's an extremely insecure and a painful life for animals, much more probably than human beings, probably human beings capable of arranging things in ways that are much more pleasant, unless you're a tiger or an eagle or something like that. So you open yourself up to the suffering that's inherent in human existence, and you allow that to ignite your heart, is the way I put it, I thought rather appositely, to ignite it to more intense spiritual practice, to a desire to contribute to others by helping them to find their way forward in the Dharma towards self-transcendence, and by aligning yourself with the forces that are trying to benefit the world, and especially the forces that transcend the personal, the forces that, as it were, lie at the heart of reality, that are the reality's own urge to fulfill itself, which you align yourself with and allow to work through you. In other words, the bodhicitta. So that's what this verse is getting at, this bodhicitta practice, as well as this bodhicitta-like attitude in daily life, where you try not to shut off from suffering and not to go into horrified despair, but to allow yourself to be inspired creatively by it to greater and deeper efforts, and to opening yourself up to a force of spirit that transcends yourself.